Yeah, thanks a lot, Roger. Yeah, it's really a great pleasure and fortunate to have the opportunity to discuss some of my works in the intersection of quantum science and machine learning. Yeah, I really like this Oshoff series, and I also come before, but it's really a pity this time could not meet in person. But I would really want to discuss more with people, and just let me know if there's any things want to chat online later, and can feel free to send emails or things. I also would be glad to learn more from everyone in the conference. So to start with, let me have just a brief introduction on myself. I'm Dee Luo, currently a postdoc I-5 fellow at MIT. I work in this institute called the NSF AI Institute for Artificial Intelligence and Fundamental Interactions, as well as associated with the Co-Design Center for Quantum Advantage. So my research is in the intersections of quantum many-body physics, quantum information science, as well as artificial intelligence. So today I want to share some of my recent work and as well as my research interest in this intersection of artificial intelligence, quantum informations, and physics. So in these recent years, we can also see a lot of very exciting progress and connection between all these three fields. So in particular, today I want to talk about this topic under this name, more or less like AI for science. In a sense, we tried to ask these questions, what AI can help us advance quantum science. In particular, I want to share some of the work in these different areas, ranging from high-energy physics, condensed matter physics, as well as quantum information science. So to start this, I think one of the interesting topics in quantum science in particular is quantum many-body simulations. It's a very important problem that many people know, but at the same time, it's also a very challenging problem. So it's also very challenging, and even GPT knows it's very challenging. So when we ask GPT why this is a challenging problem, GPT can also recognize that it comes from this called the exponential growth of the dimensionality of the Hilbert space with respect to the number of particles. So this makes it very hard for exact simulations on classical computer. As a physicist, we can actually say it a bit more than the GPT, even though GPT is already very intelligent these days. So more precisely, when we talk about quantum simulations, there are roughly two categories of problems. One is related to spectrum calculations, where we have a Hamiltonians. We want to solve the eigenstate of the Hamiltonians. So this can tell us information about phase diagram, excited states, or other static state, or if we change Hamiltonian to the Lewinian operator. Another category of problems comes from real-time evolutions, where we may have time-dependent Hamiltonians. We want to do time evolutions and understand what happens. So that also involves a lot of important physics, such as quantum chaos, quantum circuit simulations, dynamics of quantum gauge theories. So in general, there are actually two kinds of challenge, depending on how you view it. One problem actually is very famous. It's called the psi problems. It actually comes from the Hamiltonian levels, but reflecting sometimes in the wave function level, which people can see non-positive real numbers or complex number of these wave functions. And that will cause some interference and lead to large sample complexity for some of the sampling algorithms. Another kind of challenge is the high dimensionality, which we are more familiar with, which means the Hilbert space scales exponentially is a number of particles. Despite all this challenge, there's actually a lot of ongoing efforts using different approach for tackle the problems. One famous approach is the quantum Monte Carlo methods. And the high-level idea is to try to tackle these high dimensionality problems through sampling. So one example, for example, is the diffusion Monte Carlo. People can sample, perform imaginary time evolutions through chaufferization, and each of these chaufferized steps can be viewed as some kind of transition probability. So this approach is very effective if there's no psi problem, means that this 1i minus tau divided by nh is really a transition matrix without psi. So then one can do like a classical Monte Carlo methods. But if that's some complex number or negative number, then this will cause this psi problem we talked about earlier, which the relative variance of the psi good scales is potentially resulting very large sample complexity. There's also another very important approach, which is the tensor network approach. It's a very elegant and beautiful approach. So the high level idea is to look for low dimensional tensor decomposition of these high dimensional objects. So this is very efficient for 1D system due to the area law. So challenge it takes for high dimension due to this entanglement limitation, but still there's a lot of exciting progress pushing forward the approach. Another important approach in the recent years is on quantum computations. So this is very natural because the problem you try to solve is quantum. So we wonder whether we can have some natural machine to tackle it directly. So this is very good for quantum dynamics. It can also be used for ground state, even though in general this kind of problem may be QMA hard, but there's a lot of heuristics and terms pushing forward as well. But more or less in this day, the challenge is coming from the current technology on this noisy near-term device may limit the performance, even though there's some good theoretical guarantee. So that's still a very interesting frontier area. So today I want to actually focus more on this AI approach, which under more or less different name, but one name is called the neural quantum space. So when we look back to for this example on solving the spectrum calculations, one way to understand this, which I also quite find interesting, connected to, for example, this AlphaGo pictures, is that we can view this Hamiltonian of n particle spin 1/2 system as a 2 to the n and 2 to the n Hermitian matrix. And this wave function actually is the 2 to the n vector. And this 2 to the n vector actually describes how the spin, for example, on the lattice looks like. So in fact, actually the spin configuration have the 2 to the n configurations. And that actually is very analogous to this game of gold, where we have black and white chess. And this is just like a spin up and spin down. So given this alpha goal is very intelligent to look for the best combinations of how people can play Go, one can also ask this question, can maybe machine learning help find what's the best superposition of such configurations? So in 2017, Kalio and Choya, actually, they first proposed this idea of representing wave functions through a neural network. So the high level idea is to try to look for low dimension representation of such high dimension objects. And as we also know about some of this universal approximation theorem as a motivation, that neural network can approximate many functions, and this wave function is also some kind of functions. So why not just try to input some configuration of this spin and then output the wave function amplitude, and that constructs a representation of wave functions. So actually there's some of the very interesting property of such representation. People study a lot of one of the important questions that was the representability of such constructions. So people found that it can represent volume null state, which is somehow more than the tensor network. And can also have a lot of exact representation for different like answer people know, for example, stabilizer state gestures, and also can perform variation simulation without psi problem. And there's also some recent study which show that the neural network quantum state can actually be a larger class, I mean, than this conventional MPS and the approximately contractable PEP state, not the true PEP state, but that exists some neural network state, which is hard to be represented by tensor networks. So we also have some study actually to look into some of the representation and the trainability of such states through this idea called neural state, quantum state neural tangent kernel. So we found that we can also actually use some of the, even just the infinite limit, we can engineer some of the very interesting like volume law property or large entanglement properties through the neural tangent kernel, as well as we can show that the quantum state supervised learning can guarantee to converge in some of these limits. So after this idea, actually there's a lot of exciting studies on this field with different applications through like a quantum state tomography, entanglements, as well as in condensed matter quantum chemistry. So I only listed a few of the study here, but there's a lot. I think many of the audience have also done exciting work in this field. So today I want to just share a few more concrete topics under this theme for this AI for content, in more or less related to some of the work that I have been doing or have done before. So the first topics I want to discuss a little bit is the AI for content in the context of strongly correlated physics. So in particular, one of the interesting research area I have is in the electronic study. So one approach of this area starts from the Hamiltonians that we know from materials or from some of the model systems. And we want to have some method that can actually solve this Hamiltonian and obtain properties of materials or phase diagram. And one of the approaches through this thing called variational study, in particular by designing variational wave functions. And the goal here is that we try to lower the variational phase functions, or maybe we want to have some more nice property of such design, such that you can capture the physics of the system well. For example, of obeying symmetry, or maybe have some proper mean field limit. Previously, one approach I've worked on is called the Bethe-Fowler transformation around neural networks of quantum many-body wave functions. In particular, this question tried to address this question: can we design anti-symmetry neural network for the fermion-only simulations? And as we know, for such problem, the fermion simulation needs to have this anti-symmetry by switching two predictions, and then there's a negative side there. And blindly, there's not whole. For arbitrary neural network. So this approach actually is inspired by this idea from Feynman in the early stage called Bethe flow transformation. So you have this hierarchy, as we know from the electronic study from the mean field, we have the threshold, and then one can have a further update called Bethe flow. So usually when people solve the electronic problem, we have the Slater determinants, we solve the orbital. So this is very good in the sense that it captured some good physics information, but it also has the cons that it's hard to capture the strongly correlated effect. So the Bethe flow transformation says that instead of have a fixed particle orbital, can we have this orbital also change as the particle move? So it's something it flow as the particle floats. So the idea is that instead of have a fixed mean field determinant, now we promote such single particle determinant for many particle determinants, orbitals, by having this orbital function also depends on all the electrons. So Feynman first proposed this idea in the helium problem, and he has a very intelligent formula to how to write out such transformation. But in general, this transformation is very hard to find out. So here, the idea is that can we use a neural network to look for this best neural network backflow transformations? And the high level idea here is that instead of representing the wave function directly, we have a neural network that can change the orbital of the wave functions. And we can show that such transformation actually creates a configuration and many particle dependent orbitals. And we can also allow the neural network to work with fermion and change its size structure directly. And this can also generalize to arbitrary systems and lattice. And finally, this results a wave function that not directly coming from the neural network, but coming from the determinant of such a neural network, transform many particle orbitals. And then once we have this answer, we can perform the variational Monte Carlo to look for example, ground state property. So we have this wave function represented by the neural network. So we minimize the energy, and this minimizing of energy can be converted to some gradient calculation, which is very efficient by computing the local energy and performing sampling. So we benchmark this approach to various systems in both the Hubble models and Kagame systems. So this is even is a spin, but we can use some of these Parton constructions or BDG functions level to generalize this approach. So that means that it's not just limited to ordinary fermion-only system either. Both have some very good performance. So in summary, this approach basically provides a way to design anti-symmetric neural network. It can change the size directly and generalize to arbitrary lattice. And we also have some theoretical, because theoretically in there, as well as provides a lower bound for being the existing Bethe flow method, which we can show that it can be also representing by like one layer network. So later, there's also very exciting progress in quantum chemistry. For example, Fermi net and Pauli net utilize this idea, but generalizing to the continuous space, which they definitely done more works in how to incorporate continuous permutation symmetry and actually have very nice results. So for example, some of this early literature, they also talk about how this idea of neural network backflow in FermiNet, PolyNet, and this work can be generalized. And further advancement, I think there's a lot of exciting progress in both fermionic simulation in general, not limited to this approach, but in, for example, second quantization or other first quantization approach. And I think in this workshop, there's also a conference that's a very nice talk later coming from Lei Wang and Jin's and maybe other people on that. I only just listed a few work, but I think there's more work that also very nice. And I think just also one more line along this spirit of how to integrating neural network into some of the physics structure. So previously, when we talk about the neural network backflow, we integrate the neural network with the state and determinant hierarchies. So recently, we also pushing forward these ideas by integrating neural network with the tensor network. So that's also some previous study, I mean, along this line. So here, the feature we have is that we, in particular, can integrate the tensor network with the auto-regressive models. So this allows us actually to have a more general structure, can both unify the autoregressive neural network as well as the tensor network to the ANTN, which we call the autoregressive neural tensor network, and which gives rise to more generalizability. And we can also utilize the tensor network as the physical inductive bias to learn the size structures and other things well. And we also find that by doing so, we can just use a very small bond dimensions of the tensor network. Basically, for the tensor network here, we have autoregressive network in the bulk to have better performance than a large bond tensor network calculations. So I think that just conclude a bit on this part on the strongly collided physics. And I want to talk a bit more besides the ground state physics, which is more on the light of the real-time quantum dynamics and how machine learning could be helpful. So in general, one question that always intrigues me is that what's the connection between the quantum world and the classical world? So in the quantum world, we have the wave function, we have the density matrix as the objects, and then to evolve them, we may perform unitary dynamics or quantum channels. So this actually is a very fundamental and but also challenge because many of these dynamic have oscillating phase, and that's also written a very nice work by people here. I think that's also be probably more some of the talk later related to this on how to use neural network quantum state to simulate such dynamics. But on the other hand, I also wonder, can we actually convert such quantum world as possible as a classical world in the sense that can we have this wave function and density matrix becomes a probability distribution and such unitary or quantum channel becomes a causal stochastic process. In the perfect case, it may become a stochastic process, then there may not have side problems, and then maybe the problem is even simpler. So one possible way to achieve such goal is through the idea called POVM measurements. So compared to the conventional projected measurements, which we lose information of the phase of the wave function, for example, the POVM measurement actually can be information complete, which means that it can retain all the information of the density matrix and convert it to a probability distribution through measurement. So for one example is this called tetrahedral POVM, which can measure a density matrix with respect to this different M projector. And then one can convert the P and the rho vice versa. And this approach actually can be realized experimentally and also recently by Huang and Roger Melko on this very nice work on utilizing such frameworks combining with generating model to perform quantum tomography. So more precisely, actually, if we return it a bit in the tensor network language, basically it means that the probability can be converted to a density matrix and vice versa. And actually more generally, we can actually later in the work, we generalize this also to the operator level, which means that for any of this unitary evolution, we can convert it to a quasi-stochastic gate and vice versa. So the motivation or the intuition here is that if we convert such density matrix or wave function evolution to this probability distribution, then we may use some of these very powerful generative models in classical machine learning. In particular, we know that in quantum mechanics, they have this very fascinating phenomenon called quantum entanglement, which creates a lot of correlation and long-range non-local correlations. And the same thing could also happen in language, which we know that in language, there's a lot of long-range correlation. So one question that we wonder is that, can we view such qubit as some language and then model such long, high-dimensional distribution, so for example, this QVM, as a long-range with long-range correlations using machine learning tools. So one thing we have made some attempts on is to represent this with the transformer. So this comes from the very famous paper called Attention is All You Need. It basically can represent a high dimensional probability as a conditional distribution and then perform exact sampling and inference. And this showed to be very powerful in all this current MLP natural language study and even as one of the foundational models for this ChatGPT. So by utilizing this, we actually first performed some attempts on how to simulate some quantum state preparation, for example, like for up to 60 qubits or GSE state or graph state simulations. And more interestingly, I think we also extend this approach to open quantum system simulations. So in the standard quantum formulation of open system, we actually consider a system together with the dissipated environment, which they can couple each other, have some interaction. And the system itself actually is governed by the Hamiltonians, but the environment and the system, they couple, so they have some dissipation. And this gives rise to a more general operator, usually we call it Lewinian. So this actually will have a Lewinian equation on the density matrix, which we have the system part, which is the commutator with the Hamiltonian and the density matrix, as well as a noisy part, which have this jump operator. By utilizing the same idea, actually now we can actually transform such equation in the density matrix space to the probability space, in the sense that now we can no longer deal with this complex value object, but we can deal with a real positive object as a linear differential equation on the probability P with this transform operator L, which is coming from both this H and the jump operator. But this operator can also be efficiently computed. And now we can design algorithm to simulate such systems. So for example, if we want to do the dynamics, then we can actually generalize the standard numerical, for example, forward backward algorithms to this stochastic way. So for example, we can actually first have an existing transformer to represent a PT tie. We perform forward evolutions. And then the thing we want to optimize is at T plus two tau stage, we can perform backward evolutions. And then we define wave function as the difference between the two. We can then optimize this wave function and then iterate this procedure again and again, such that we can have multiple step updates for such representation of the density. We can also solve the static states by minimizing the derivative to be zero directly. So this is also very efficient. We just need to have the loss function as the right-hand side of this evolution. So that's also a very interesting approach based on the TDVP, tie-dependent variation approach by people also utilizing the same framework under this POVM. And I think maybe there will also be some talk later by Maurice Wren. So that would be also interesting. And actually, we can also show that this approach has certain very nice connections, especially the TDVP can also be as a first order methods as the expansion of the Euler schemes in the space. So we also have some tests on such approach. So we found it quite interestingly, for example, if we want to solve the 1D static state, early on we compare to this existing approach based on the RBN density representation, we found that such probability representation actually can be more accurate than this RBN approach in some of the regions. And also we found that this can capture the dynamic pretty well for both the 1D and 2D in 4D spins and some 2D systems. And recently we further also developed this approach to the continuous space. And one of the ideas we have is called the Q-flow, which we utilize this for generating modeling for differential equations of open quantum dynamics using the normalizing flow. So the high level idea is that we have this, again, this density matrix representation, which is a complex value. In general, it could be challenged to do this because one needs to parameterize such complex function with oscillating phase. But then we actually also found that there's a representation underlying this idea called Q functions, which can convert this density matrix to a probability. And this probability is a Cauchy probability, but it's always greater than zero. And then now we can utilize this very powerful technique called normalizing float, which parameterize continuous variable distributions. And then we represent it. And then we develop a KL Euler scheme. Basically, we try to match these functions at ties t and the t plus dt step, and then we iterate it. And then we found that this approach can actually be used directly with either the TDVP or the Euler methods that we develop, and both have achieved very good performance compared to other approach like the conventional solver, finite difference, they cannot be extended to this high dimensional space, or even the physics informed neural network is also not very good in this high dimensional space. And that's also some more attempts actually we have pushed forward along this line of research of the dynamic simulations. So previously more of this approach are more like a step-by-step optimizations. So one question very interesting is that can we optimize all the tie steps of the wave function directly? So to achieve that, actually we've developed this idea called space-time neural network, which means that now we have a neural network, not just represent a wave function in just a one particular time. We can represent the wave function for all time. So to achieve that, we have a two neural network. One's called a spatial neural network. The spatial neural network is to parameterize the wave function of the S part. But then we have an internal temporal network, which can generate the wave function of all the tie steps. So by doing so, actually now, we can have a loss function that involving all the tie steps simultaneously, and then optimize this space-time neural network. So this optimization can provide us a wave function, and not just on one tie step, but on a slide of ties, which can be useful for other applications as well. So I think that actually concludes this part on the real time dynamics that I want to share a bit. Probably maybe I wonder if people have anything want to chat a bit. Is this a good timing or maybe I should just proceed?
Questions now or should we wait till the end? Oh, okay. Well, we got one question, but Bhaskaran, wait. You need this. You sure? Sorry about your mic, boys.
You made a statement, qubit as a language in the context of long-range correlation. Can you elaborate on it briefly?
Oh, yeah, this is a very good point. This is not any regular statement. It's more on intuitions, but let me elaborate a bit and why this intuition comes from. So it's more or less the idea we observed that in the entanglement case, then they have these non-local correlations created by this quantum entanglement. And the qubit actually, as a language, actually this has also a lot of long-range correlations, which is non-trivial. And what we mean by qubit as a language is that by converting to this POVM distribution, now the wave function, instead of talking about the wave function over qubit, we talk about distribution over qubit. So now we try to draw this analogy whether we can understand some of this maybe entangled structure instead in the wave function level, but in this probability level, and whether they may have some similarity between this probability distribution over qubit compared to the probability distribution of the language, since they both have some long range correlations. But more actually precisely, there's also some very recent work, I think by some of the people also in the conference, they studied this idea called quantum contextuality. So basically this contextuality have some very nice property about non-locality, and people try to connect this non-locality also to natural language process and generations. And that actually have more actually a very interesting property there as well.
Thank you.
Okay. At the beginning of your talk, you discussed backflow corrections. Could you tell us a bit how your method compares with a regular backflow followed by diffusive Monte Carlo that, you know, was been developed like 20 years ago or so on? How do you perform better, could you benchmark a bit your method with this?
Oh yes, we actually can be better than a conventional backflow, and we also show that the traditional backflow can be represented.
Backflow plus diffusive backflow plus diffusive Monte Carlo. Because usually it's the first step of the method.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. We have not benchmarked that in our work, but I think later, maybe in some of the talk today, people, I think in some of the reason what they do benchmark backflow is DMC. And they found that the neural network backflow or more development along this line can be better, actually. They have some study, I think, recently, yeah.
And I have the same question for what you discussed with combining MPS with neural network. Can you show us? Because you were very fast on the results themselves, so I didn't really catch.
Yes, so here actually we discussed this MPS. So basically what we do is that we have this comparison of this actually MPS we call the anonymized mind DMRG. So this DMRG result actually is a DMRG of Born dimension 1024. But here we have this anonymized, actually it's called anonymized AMTM. So basically this architecture, we only use a Born dimensional 8 MPS on top, and then we put an autoregressive network here. So what we find is that as the number of system grows, actually our approach can be better than this very large bond dimension DMRG results. And this trend, actually we don't plot here, but it become more obvious as we increase the number of qubits. So that actually means that this neural network transformation can enhance this MPS representability quite a lot of amounts.
Okay, D, you have more slides to go through, right?
Yes, so maybe I should just proceed and then we can discuss more.
Let's do one more question and then, yeah.
Hi, D, very nice talk. So for this autoregressive tensor network slice, can this method be extended to high dimension?
Oh, yes, that's a very good point. So actually, we do show that in the work, this approach can be compatible with like a PEPS. Or Mira or any other tensor network, even though we only do MPS in this work at the moment.
Okay, keep going. If you have more slides, Shwini.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the discussion. So next I will draw into some of the work on AI for quantum field theory simulation, which more on the context of high energy physics. So previously we more talk about like in the condensed matter setup or material setup, we have the electrons, but in the fundamental theory, actually we know that electron does couple to the gauge field. So this actually opens us to the questions on how can we simulate the gauge theory. And the gauge theory actually plays a very important role in multiple fields. For example, in high energy physics, we know the standard model is a phrase in the gauge theory. In condensed matter, there's a lot of exotic phase of matters, for example, spin liquid, they're all related to gauge field theory. And in quantum information, the quantum error correction code actually is another way to state gauge theory as a stabilizer. But in general, the simulation of gauge theory can even be more challenged for multiple perspectives. For example, you still have a very high dimensional qubit space. You have the psi problem coming from fermions. But besides that, people also need to respect the gauge symmetry, not just the anti-symmetry of the fermions. And then we need to deal with the continuous field variables. And as well, maybe even need to consider continuum limits of the underlying systems. So that's some of the work that I want to just discuss a bit along this slide with multiple different attempts. So one is on this called gauge recurring neural network on how to respect gauge symmetries, as well as the reason what we do on the gauge fermions, mode net for 2+1D QED at finite density, as well as the work with John, what I think is on the conference here on neural quantum field state for continuum quantum field theory. But to start with, I think that one of the very familiar examples of gauge theory we have is on the toric coat problem. So basically, toric-off and reviewers, there's a spin 1/2 degree of freedom on each link. And then besides just a spin model, they need to fulfill a certain symmetry, which is through this thing called Gauss law. So basically, this operator called AV, this operator put some constraint on these spin systems. And this is a Z2 gauge theory because this degree of freedom is Z2. It's just a spin 1/2. And one actually can take one more step further to generalize it to continue gauge theory, where this instead of spin 1/2, this become a U1 variables. So it have an infinite degree of freedom. And now they still have this Gauss law operator, we usually call it GV here, and there's some more term which have the electric field energy here, as well as the magnetic field energy. So this U1 pure gauge theory can be viewed as a quantum version of the Maxwell theory that we know in the classical dynamic. And then one can further ask this question, can we further gauge this theory? And we have this method on the vertex of this lattice. So this method can be fermions, and now the fermion can hop. So that will be more challenge because now we not just have a gauge field, but we have a matter field. And the matter field and the gauge field now, they couple together through this more general form of the Gauss law. And we also need to consider both the fermion anti-symmetry as well as the gauge field symmetry, as well as the fermionic psi problem. So along this line, actually, we have developed some tool actually to try to proceed and see whether we can go not just in this theory, but to a more general way of path to the standard model on even non-abelian theory simulation. But to start with, I want to first maybe introduce a bit about this work on gauge recurrent neural network. So more precisely, what this Gauss law we talked about earlier can be viewed mathematically through this way. Whenever we have a toric-off, which is a problem defined on this torus, we have the Plaquette operator, which is the product of sigma z operator, and we have the vertex operator, which is the product of the sigma s operator. So the Gauss law can be viewed as the questions on imposing constraint on the wave function. It also needs to simultaneously become the eigenstate of this GV operator. And this actually creates a subspace of the original Hamiltonian. So basically, we need to not just solve or minimize this problem with respect to Hamiltonians, but we need to minimize the problem with the Hamiltonian under this subspace. So this is the gauge symmetry to be fulfilled. And in other words, that means this wave function needs to fulfill such condition that the transformation on the configuration lifts the wave function invariant. So to do that, basically, we utilize this idea of gauge recurrent by using the Wilson loop and the Wilson path. We can show that basically, we can have a construction of the neural network that fulfills these conditions. And we also provide a set representation under this neural network for a bunch of models, including toric-off, KITEF, DG model, Fredholm ground states. And we also apply this to the transverse field toric-off phase transition. We can find that there's a good distinction between this area law and the parameter law states. And we further also like generalize this to the continuous variable case. And this Gauss law actually becomes a little bit more complicated for the continuous case. So now instead of a spin on the edge, we have a U1 rotor variables. And then we have the kinetic term, which is the electric field energy, as well as a Plaquette term, which is the magnetic flux energy. And the Gauss law actually is now written in this way. Basically, the wave function needs to be invariant under the shift. So this actually can be related to this temporal gauge in the Maxwell equation. If we shift this Maxwell equation by a bit, it does not change. So we found that our result actually also pretty good. Actually have comparable result in the big coupling regime and even better result in the strong coupling regime compared to the previous state of art method of this complex Gaussian approach. And to deal with the gauge field coupled to matter, actually, we utilize a different idea, but it's still also under this idea called gauge invariant approach. So this idea we first developed actually in the discrete variable case. Basically, we noticed that we can develop an auto-regressive neural network that actually have the gauge invariant as well as the anionic symmetries. So this approach is also very general. The high-level idea is that we noticed that this auto-regressive network of function actually can factorize a function into a product of conditional wave functions. And then by utilizing this idea called composite particle, we can actually impose many of this gauge symmetry or algebraic constraint of this anionic symmetry into this composite particle because many of these properties are local. So by doing so, actually we can perform simulation using auto-regressive neural networks with gauge constraint and algebraic constraint to some of these high energy models called quantum link models, toroidal models, Fredholm and anions. And we can also show such construction can exactly represent the ground state and excited state for Fredholm and anion models. So some of the simulation we have is that we find very good central charge calculation directly from this Fibonacci anion chains. We can also perform the 1 plus 1D QED real-time dynamic of string inversions. And further recently, we actually further generalize this approach to the 2 plus 1D case with this thing called gauge fermion float, which now we can also represent not just a spin degree freedom, but a continuous degree freedom of this gauge field by a discrete flow. And then we also have a design which we combine autoregressive flow and the neural network backflow to represent the vector field, which is the fermion degree of freedom. And we can still, by using both the backflow and the autoregressive flow, now we can fulfill the Gauss law symmetry. We can do exact sampling without correlation time. And then we can also simulate the model without side problem. So we use this very new approach to start a variety of a very interesting phenomenon, such as string breaking, which is related to the confinement, as well as the charge crystal phase transition and the magnetic phase transition that people do not see before. So there's one more thing I also want to highlight a bit. I think also in a very interesting work with John and Sonat at IBM, John at MIT. So here we develop a neural quantum field state for the continual quantum field theory simulation directly. So this actually also get rid of the problem of first star with the lattice, but we can do the problem directly on the continuous space. And to achieve so actually, we can have this, instead of working with the standard neural network quantum state, we need to deal with the infinite particle possibility. So now we actually have a neural network representation on the fourth space and the insight coming from using the DC architecture, which now we can have the superpositions of all wave function of different particle numbers. And then we also apply this approach to different model like the Litinger model, SCS model, and the regularized Klein-Golden model. They all have a very good performance. So finally, I want to just share a bit on the AI for quantum in the context of quantum information science. So there's a lot of very nice work and very interesting and exciting progress. So here, I just want to share few work just related to some of my research. But I think there's a lot of more exciting also talks, I think, later in the week. So one of the perspectives are interesting in so people do this AI for either like a quantum machine learning, whether or classical machine learning applied to quantum data, classical data. So here I want to more focus on to be on how the classical machine learning can be inserted as a loop into maybe some of this quantum architecture design, or maybe helpful for quantum optimizations. So it's not directly for quantum machine learning, but we can see whether we can use classical machine learning to enhance quantum technology. So one work we start earlier is with also Luke and Huang here. So we should discuss this protocol discovery of quantum control of Majorana, so differential programming and natural evolution strategy. So basically the idea here is that in some of this topological quantum computation, we want to break some of this Majorana zero mode. And the question is that how can we transport this Majorana zero mode in some tie scale? So we know that if this tie can be infinite, we can do it adiabatically, but realistic, we cannot do it in infinite tie because some of the decoherence, so we want to move it quick. So that becomes a trade-off or some kind of phase diagram. That's a trade-off on how far we want to move and how many tries we want to take. So earlier the study have some good theoretical understanding in this adiabatic regime, but it's not known how the protocol should be looked like in other regions. So by utilizing the differentiable programming and natural evolution, actually we figure out some very interesting unknown protocol in all the regime, as well as rediscover this adiabatic protocol as well. But for this new regime, actually this new protocol we developed also have some good later insights to have this good physics understanding. And this actually gets into this spirit of whether we can use some of the classical machine learning to help design quantum technology. And then actually that's also one reason what that I want to share to be is on how to accelerate gradient-based quantum optimization using the classical machine learning theory, which is called Koopman operator learnings. So the motivation of this actually coming from that the gradient-based optimization is very powerful in machine learning or classical optimization. So this idea called backward propagation, because basically people can compute all the gradient per step at one time. But in the quantum case, this is much more costly because people need to do this, for example, usually like a parameter shift route to compute the gradient for each parameter. So that means the scaling of this gradient-based optimization usually need to scale with the number of parameter directly. So that becomes very expensive. In particular, if we look at some of this Amazon Braket cloud platform, if one want to perform such calculation, then they also charge with number of particles. So this is not economic friendly either. So that actually motivates these questions. Can we actually predict the future optimization trajectory by skipping some gradient calculation? Or can we actually predict the gradient directly? And the inspiration actually coming from this very interesting work by Kuhlman in the 90s, 30s, which he tried understanding classical dynamics through quantum dynamics. But now this idea can be phrased as the following. So let's consider that's a classical nonlinear differential equation. It's very complicated. And we want to understand how this classical dynamic equation changes as a function of time. And the Kuhlman theory says that actually one can embed such nonlinear classical equation into a high dimensional space. And this embedding makes the theory to be linear, such that one can predict the dynamic directly. So Kuhlman actually connect this embedding to a quantum theory. And somehow people maybe can use this to solve like a nonlinear PDE or turbulence on a quantum computer in some of this flavor through this idea of linearization. And our observation is the following. If we consider the gradient approach, for example, this quantum natural gradient approach, it actually, this parameter theta now actually follows a nonlinear differential equation. And this parameter theta is basically a classical variable. And then we ask whether we can look for Kuhlman operator theory to embed such nonlinear classical differential equation into a high dimension space such that it becomes linear. And then we can predict the evolution of such parameter theta directly. And turns out people notice that the quantum natural gradient has a very natural connection to quantum imagined time evolution. And this imagined time evolution basically is a high dimensional linear equation in the Riemannian manifold. So that means that there's a very good connection on linearization. And more concretely, actually, we also in the paper discussed that linearization can happen not just in the quantum natural gradient regime, but also related to some of this idea called follower parameterization theories, or in this quantum new tangent kernel context. So our scheme actually basically is the following. We have this quantum computer, which can perform ordinary quantum optimizations. And then we need to predict what's this theta without computing the gradient directly. So what we do is that we can first collect some data for few steps. So this as the conventional cost proportional to number of parameters. And then we perform the Kuhlman operator learning by embedding such a theta variable into a high dimensional space. And now we can just predict the dynamic of the theta directly. And this prediction can be directly verified on quantum computer without doing any parameter shift rule. So this cost is independent of number of parameters. And then we also have an alternating control scheme to make sure that we always select the best predictions, even though this prediction can be wrong in the long time, but it doesn't matter. And then we have this iteration. And we can also show that for each of this iteration of this scheme called, the optimal parameters theta can yield equivalent or even lower cost than the conventional gradient method. So that means that it can speed it up as well as preserving at least as good as performance as before. So we test this speed up ratio for various of contexts. For example, in the over parameterization regime, we found that we can achieve like a 200 times of speed up than just doing gradient descent in the over parameterization regime. Even in some of the non-over parameterization regime, we can also get a factor of 10 speed up. And we also test in various models in the quantum chemistry case, in the condensed matter case, as well as the quantum machine learning case. And this dashed line, you can see that like this black line is the conventional VQE approach. And this different color lines, the different, we call the Kuhlman learning approach, utilizing this idea called DMD, dynamical mode decompositions, as well as the neural network DMD we developed. So basically they achieve the same performance in much earlier time step than the conventional one. So the motivation here is that we can actually save a lot of gradient calculation and quantum resources, but achieve even better performance in many of these optimization. So I will like to finally conclude some of the discussion today, which more or less I want to convey this idea. There's a new opportunity for machine learning of same-labeled quantum antibody phases as quantum information science. Definitely, there's a lot of open questions for how to deal with symmetry, design neural network, as well as for study ground state, finite temperature, and real ties a lot. Looking forward to learning more from people in the workshops and other and this conference in the talk later as well. And finally, I also want to thank many of my collaborators for some of the work discussed before. Yes, thanks a lot. If there's any thought or suggestion, we can also discuss more now here.
Thank you, Dee. Time for a couple questions. Let's start with the audience, and then we can move online.
Hi, I really enjoyed the talk. Specifically, I was interested in your results related to, do you pronounce it quack, Q-U-A-C-K? So you said that you got something on the order of a 200 time speed up for the training time. Did you maybe do any experiments to kind of show whether or how much that speed up allows you to train in larger systems? So let's say you have a smaller system and you're maxing out your training time. If you can get this sort of speed up, then does that correspond to some kind of a predictable increase in the systems that you're able to train on?
Yes, so this is a very good point. So this experiment we can only do up to, so this 200 speed up is up to 5 qubits. The reason is not because we cannot do larger, it's just in some sense we cannot really do too larger because the simulation to get to the over parameterization regime, it really need to have a lot of parameters. And this actually is related to one of the recent work by people in Maryland. They show that in the over parameterization regime, the gradient descent dynamic actually becomes a perturbation on the imaginative dynamics. This linear Riemannian flow on the Riemannian geometries. So in general, we found that at least theoretically, this result is true regardless of number of qubits. And we do found that from these 2 to 5 qubits to bridge into the OM parameterization regime, they both have roughly this 200 factor of a speed up. So from this theoretical and empirical observation, we do think that this can actually scale well for a number of qubits.
Thanks, Dee. Yep. Other questions?
Hi, Dee. Maybe a related question. So how does the over-parameterization play a role here? So basically, if one doesn't have over-parameterization, which is really hard to achieve in NISQ devices, will this method still give a speed up? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good point. So the first question is that how the over parameterization comes in. So the observation we have here is that in the quantum natural gradient, basically this is more or less like a linear equation, but up to the Riemannian manifold. And people recently showed that in the over parameterization regime, this gradient descent formula can be embedded back to this imagined high evolution, but plus a small perturbation. And this perturbation is very small. So more or less it's still, in some sense, it's close to linear. So that's why, that's the intuition why we found this method works well. And then the second question is that what happens if this is not the over-parameterization regime? So actually this a factor of 10 result actually is not in the over-parameterization regime because this parameter is much fewer. So for example, in this over-parameterization regime, we get like a 2000 parameter, but here we just get a few parameters up to this results actually up to 12 qubits. But we still found that that can have a factor of 10, which I think is also meaningful in real application. And all these examples here on quantum chemistry, condensed matter, and quantum machine learning are not in over-parameterization regime either. Yeah, but that can actually raise an interesting questions. Can we, in the future, because the over-parameterization regime, even though it has a lot of parameter, but if this problem has some symmetry, or if we can design the circuit, utilize some Hamiltonian-inspired answer, people can find that the over-parameterization regime is still in this regime, but the number of parameters is much fewer. So in those contexts, we think that could also be another very interesting direction if we can design such circuit and then accelerate in those contexts. which is no longer need to have a lot of parameter, but still guaranteed to have a convergence.
Thanks, Dee. I think in the interest of time, since we're running a bit late, I think we'll end the questions there. So again, thanks so much, Dee, for opening up the conference with an amazing talk. Hopefully we'll see more of you on the Zoom platform going forward. Everybody, we have a 15-minute coffee break, so go grab your poison or whatever, and we'll meet everybody back here at 11:15. And let's thank D'Lo again for a great talk. Thanks, D.
Yeah, thanks a lot.